This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Carrie Barber. Thanks for joining us. The American College of Sports Medicine keeps careful track each year of what new habits people are picking up and what they're leaving behind when it comes to physical exercise. They issue a report each year that ranks the top 10 trends in fitness. That report helps fitness professionals, gym owners, and their clients understand what's helpful in staying active. Today we have the lead author of that report, exercise physiologist Kayla McAvoy, who's here to take us through the list.
First of all, I'm just curious, how do you determine what, like today I want to talk about the top 10, or I'm not sure if we'll get to all 10, but I'm just going to start at one and we'll see how far we get.
Yeah.
But how do you determine the list? Like, how do you determine what the biggest trends are?
That's a great question. And so we have a trends committee and it has six people on it, and they have different appointments on purpose. So we have a position that's purposely in the industry out working as an exercise physiologist or exercise, some sort of industry professional, just to make sure it's not just academics or something, you know, anything like that. We also make sure to have survey experts on there and a global expert as well. So we get kind of a diverse group on there, and we start out with a list, I would say about 60, 75, and it's just kind of like everybody throwing their ideas out there, so to speak. And then we really try, just for survey fatigue, we don't want to put 75 on the survey, right? And so we look at, okay, what was last year's list? What got little to no votes? Is it time to shave those off and retire them? And or is it time to rebrand them? Maybe people are calling it something different in this day and age, you know? So we start with a longer list and then we trim, and we usually try to land with this expert committee's input right around 50-ish. And then from there, we have the survey go out, and the folks who take the survey will give their thoughts on 50-ish, like I said, 48 to 52, depending on the year. And then we narrow it down to the top 20 from there.
Okay. Okay. So you're really getting a lot of people's input, people in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah. And we learn from ourselves too. We, on the survey, we have open-ended comments. So if people, you know, if we see that a bunch of people write in and there's some sort of glaring missing thing, you know, then we try to add it. We do try to stay in our lane too, with staying with fitness. So some people might say, why aren't GLPs on there? We talk about weight management, but we may not, you know, we're staying really in the fitness realm, physical activity and exercise.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. All right. Well, let's just start at number one, which is wearable tech. And I saw in your report that it says nearly half of U.S. adults use either a tracker or a smartwatch, which is, that was remarkable to me that is a high number.
Yeah.
So can you talk about what are some of the ways that we can use those to be helpful and maybe some of the ways that are not so helpful?
So I think that's a great question. I think that this, and you know, when you look at the actual rankings of the trends, this one dominated. So it was a clear winner. Fitness professionals see them as important. The public sees them as important. Everybody's using them. And I think part of that is they keep adapting and changing and growing. And so that kind of answers both parts of your questions. I think that what's really cool and helpful about wearables is we've gone from pure step counts. Do you remember the day you had a Fitbit and it just had the dots on it and you wanted to finish your dots? I had one of those. But now it's integrated into your lifestyle, right? If you're sitting all day, it can give you a buzz to stand up. And it gives you bite-sized pieces of when to move, of how intense to move. They get better each year at the individualized information, I would say, you know, especially when it comes to like heart rate metrics. I love the heart rate metrics, particularly heart rate reserve or heart rate recovery, depending on the wearable. That being said, so I think that they're really individualized. I think that there's a lot to get out of them. And I think that they are growing and becoming adaptable to the consumer. So you can find a wearable to fit your lifestyle, if that makes sense. I also think that they're good if you're working with a fitness professional, because you're going to get likely better results because your fitness pro is going to be able to see just a little bit more objective measure of how the exercise is for you, instead of just subjective of how does this feel. You get an objective of what your body's doing. That said, I think that sometimes the wearable market is trying to fly forward. And so we want to make sure that all the metrics are useful and correct. So sometimes these are consumer-facing products. And so while there is science behind them, sometimes I'd like to see a little bit more before things just go and fly, you know, on out there. But that could go for a lot of different products in our life. So I always say use it, but don't, you know, make it your only lifeline. So try to stay away from, if my Apple Watch died, then this exercise doesn't count, right? You know, and we're all guilty of it. You know, I've started exercise and I forgot to start my watch before. And I say, oh man, crud. But don't make it, you know, your only motivation. Use it as a tool to help you get better results and help you stay motivated and connected.
Yes, I am definitely guilty of that. It didn't happen if I didn't start my watch.
I know, it's the worst. Or if I continue my exercise for too long and I'm like, nah, I never stopped it. I get frustrated. So I say that, but I'm also taking my own advice, okay?
It's funny because they want to train you to use, you know, it's like they train you too well to use it. Like, I feel like if it doesn't count if I'm not using my watch. So it's kind of crazy, but yeah, very helpful.
I have a good example of the data thing too that I was mentioning, because I feel like sometimes fitness professionals say, okay, the data has to catch up, or don't just rely on your wearable. But one of my personal points that I saw this kind of in practice is there's a VO2 calculation on a lot of watches. And what that means is your volume of oxygen consumed. How much can your body use while you're exercising? Because if you're able to more efficiently take in oxygen and spread it around, then you're going to be able to exercise more efficiently.
And it's a good, kind of a good metric for like heart health, right?
Yeah. It's a great metric. When your watch calculates that, and I'm just speaking generally about most watches, not all, there may be some out there that do this differently. But historically speaking, when they're calculating your VO2, they are using your outdoor walk or run data. And so not your indoor, or if you are dancing or swimming or something else. Now, when they do this outdoor data, they are assuming you're not stopping. So if you are stopping often because you walk your dog, or you're stopping at a bunch of lights or something like that, your calculation is probably going to say your VO2 is worse than it is, because you're going to think, it's going to think you traveled less distance in this amount of time, and the calculation is just going to get a little bit wonky. So again, don't look at the watch and just say, you know, while that could be a good metric, it's not going to be totally off. You don't want to open your watch metrics and say, oh my gosh, I'm done. My cardio fitness is terrible. I quit, you know, anything like that. You want to just remember that they have to spit out these numbers and, you know, with a method. And they're always refining and always growing, but that's a good example of why you don't want to just hang your hat solely on the numbers.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yes, I am a person who is obsessed with my VO2. So I really am glad you said that.
Yeah.
But also it's good. I mean, I have to keep in mind for myself, I want to see it getting better. And it almost doesn't, you know, I'm less concerned with what the number is, but just that it's improving.
Yeah, improvement. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point as well. So yeah, if you do have a dog, try to either take quick stops if you're logging for your VO2, or walk really fast to make up for it.
Yes. Oh, the poor dog.
I know. You got to take separate just dog walks.
Okay, so the next one is fitness for older adults, which this whole list was so interesting to me, but this is a really interesting one. It seems like, and you all, I think, are categorizing it as 60 and older, like the baby boomers. So tell me why this is important. And I think this is one that came up in the rankings from before.
Yeah, that's a great observation. So some say 60, some say 65. Either way, the that set of the population. I think that there's a general theme that we saw throughout the trends this year that I personally loved, and it had a lot to do with longevity. And so it wasn't just how, now we want to get faster, stronger, of course, that's great. But there's a lot of threads throughout that you see that we are thinking more about the long term and exercise, physical activity as a public health tool, as opposed to just being about how you look or just for, you know, a certain goal. So it's really cool to see that go up in the rankings. And, you know, I thought that there was an interesting stat we found and put there that the older adults are the ones that are using the gym most often. So if you look at a lot of gym metrics, if you're a gym owner, and again, I'm speaking generally, but if you're a gym owner and you break down your metrics of who's visiting, a lot of people, the members, the most members they see are 60, 65 and up. And so I think that that's really important when you think about your messaging. So if you are marketing and you are wanting to get people to come to your gym or you're trying to get more people active, I think it's really important to think about the goals of longevity and not just faster, stronger. Not saying faster, stronger is bad. That's great too. But I think that it's really cool to see these threads of longevity when getting people active, particularly fitness programs for older adults, and then exercise for mental health was up there as well.
And I thought it was kind of funny that they didn't, that demographic doesn't really like the label senior fitness.
Yeah.
They prefer that it's
kind of blame us. Especially if they're the ones, if they're the you know, ones that are most there, I'd be like, hey, let's think about our marketing.
Really
fair enough, right?
Yeah, it's funny. That whole generation has kind of labeled things, changed the names of things as they've gotten older, right? It only makes sense that they would do it here too. And then another one that moved up in the rankings was exercise solely for weight management, which is another thing that I see as really as a positive. So what do you have to say about that one?
Yeah, so this is one we actually changed the name of. It was exercise for weight loss in the past. We, as a group, talked about how some people have goals to gain weight, to gain muscle. And so we wanted to make sure that we were speaking to both of those things, but with the main goal being some sort of weight change, whether it's up or down. I think that, you know, exercise will always be a tool. I think that this is something that's always there. Just kind of strength training is usually on the list, and that's always there. But this one, I think, has kind of risen because there have been so many, again, going back to GLP-1s, I think that there's been a lot of talk about weight management in different ways. So the GLP-1s, Wegovy, Ozempic, all those, I think there's a lot of talk about those for weight management. And then while those are tools as well, again, going back to the longevity component, you want to think about how can, if I am using those to manage my weight, how can I sustain this? So how can I sustain that over life, make a healthier body composition that'll stick with me after this? Especially if maybe you use a GLP-1 and you lose a little bit of weight and then you get in the gym and maybe you feel a little bit more comfortable in there because your body, I mean, literally physically more comfortable, joints, you know, maybe running is a little bit more comfortable or whatever it is, something that you weren't doing before. And how can you start to live an active lifestyle to manage that over time? So I wasn't surprised to see that one move up and kind of make its stance there just because of trends going on in things outside of the fitness realm as well.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Next, number four is mobile exercise apps. Tell me a little bit about how these are helpful. These are kind of things you can take with you, whether you're following a yoga workout from your hotel room or
This is one of the ones that, you know, COVID gave us some trends and some of them stuck and then some of them, you know, kind of didn't quite as much. Mobile exercise apps boomed, I think, mainly because of the pandemic. So fitness professionals had to learn how to meet people where they are. And personally, I love that. I love that it stuck because now it's fitness can kind of go with you where you are. I like that the mobile exercise apps are in within that even becoming more adaptable. So you can have classes that are on demand, or if you want to join live stream and kind of have that community, or if you just want to have kind of a bank of exercises and a workout plan, they have a lot of tools that I think are helpful. If you are one of the individuals that says, okay, I'm going to go work out, but I'm not really sure what to do or where to start, or I want to go do this exercise, but I wish somebody would show me it. I think a lot of the mobile exercise apps are good for that too, because they can tell you proper form or they can show you a little video and then you can click next. And I think that that is something that's super helpful and breaks down barriers just if anybody has gym anxiety. Or alternatively, gym anxiety aside, if you're somebody that is on the go and traveling a lot, you can still kind of stick to a plan. And a lot of them are adaptable too. You can pick out what equipment you have, or if you want to do upper body or lower body, or you have no equipment at all, you know? So I think that that is, we're thankful that the pandemic gave that to us. And I think that that's here to stay.
And do you see any downsides with those? Like, do people... I mean, sometimes I just need somebody to like put my body in the right
position. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think that, you know, again, kind of going with trends outside of fitness, those can't give you the human component that being in a gym with a personal trainer or in a group fitness class can. So I think that, again, just like we said for the wearable technology, great tool, but put it in the toolbox.
Yeah.
Use it as a tool. It's interesting that you said that, though, because kind of to balance that one, I don't know if we'll get to this one, but the I think it was number 9, adult recreation and sport clubs made its appearance this year. So people are wanting the social aspect, you know, they want that tool as well to be able to go and meet with friends and do something active. So I think that, again, put that tool in the toolbox, put the clubs in the toolbox, and you got something really well-rounded. But certainly, if you need help with form or you're not confident on form, definitely you can use those videos are helpful. But a personal trainer, group fitness instructor is probably the way to go.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. Number 9 with the clubs, like a running club or a pickleball group or something, because it almost seemed like if you're taking the long view, like during the lockdown, I was so grateful for like the YouTube classes that I could do in my house because my gym was closed. But then I kind of was like, oh, I miss, you know, seeing people at the gym. And then I can see why that's kind of now coming back into the fore, because people are probably kind of, you know, they want that camaraderie that we had before. So it's interesting.
Absolutely. It goes back to exactly what we said about longevity. But definitely people are turning to those because they want a couple components of wellness, right? They want the fitness, the exercise, but then they also want to see their friends. I know personally, I like to go to, there's a running club in town. And would I run without the run club? Probably not. But I commit to my friends and I go and we have a great time. And honestly, it makes me run a little faster. It pushes me at the same time. So it gets you out there. And it's a good, you know, healthy hobby to have in your schedule.
Yes. Yeah, that's great. All right. Number 5 is balance, flow, and core strength. So can you explain a little bit what is that? What is the meaning of that?
Yeah. So we've had components on this of this on the trends in the past, but we kind of rebranded it. So we had Pilates, yoga, balance training. We had all of these, even bar classes were in there. And we wanted to take those and combine those because they were all doing okay-ish alone. So we said, maybe those are just different modalities, but let's combine it and put it together. And so it did really well. Going back to what we said about pandemic era type of stuff, you know, and during the pandemic, obviously, we saw dips in participation of face-to-face classes. That's starting to bounce back. We're rebounding. And I think that there is a particular burst in the kind of classes that are longevity-based. The, I don't want to say senior citizens because I don't like it. The older, across the generations, I will say across the generations, somebody who's younger or somebody who's older can go to a yoga class, a Pilates class, a bar class. What I think is really cool for that style of class is it is so adaptable to different types of bodies because it is joint healthy. And so you're getting the mind-body integration a lot of the times. And then you're also getting muscular endurance in there. And then also the social aspect as well. So this is group fitness in general is bouncing gap, but I think particularly the ones that have this mind-body component are really making an appearance. And, you know, you may even see that if you look around social media marketing and stuff, you see the reformer classes really booming. Like I said, yoga is always there and present, but I think that it's kind of making a little bit more push forward now that people are going back face-to-face more.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I'm just speculating too. I wonder if it's because of the baby boomers being such a big generation and,
sure, yeah.
And you know, at that age, you really have to become concerned with flexibility and core strength and, you know, not falling and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that that is a great speculation. I have the same speculation and injury prevention while we're at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I, you know, if I gave everybody like one piece of I'm an exercise professional, what should I work on? I think everybody, myself included, we should all make sure balance is a regular part of our regimen, single leg balance in particular. And as you get older, just making sure that you can get up off the ground on your own, you know, so sometimes that's kind of a good test, so to speak. And while those classes, while in the balance flow core strength type classes, it's not like you're necessarily practicing that per se, but you're practicing movements that are going to help with that. So I think 10 out of 10 would recommend this style class.
Yes, yes. Oh, great. All right. Well, we've gotten through 5 and unfortunately we're running out of time. I think we're going to have to end it at 5, but I will list all 10 of them on the web post that goes with this interview. So, but is there anything before we wrap up, is there anything in general that you would want to say to people about fitness in general?
Yeah. So the ACSM trends, like I said, we're in our 20th year and you see some things kind of ebb and kind of flow. But I think that one thing that's there, no matter the year, is whatever gets you moving and whatever you're going to stick to is what's most important. So if you see a trend on here and you say, okay, I'm really into that, yes, my answer is do it. Whatever is going to get you moving more, it looks different on each of us, but fitness should fit your lifestyle. Fitness should be fun, and use these things as different tools to help you along the way. But at the end of the day, do what gets you moving.
That's great. That is great advice. All right, Kayla McAvoy, thank you so much. This was such a delight to talk to you.
Yeah, what a pleasure.